Testing, testing. That work for you? Take that off. Okay.
Brad, are you going to use PowerPoint?
Yeah, I haven't unblanked it yet, though. Oh, yeah, that's going to have to help, isn't it? Yeah, a few things a little different this morning. But very joyous occasion, amen? Very wonderful, very wonderful. All right. Thank you. Thanks for bringing that down. I see quite a lot of light in here. Oh, there we go. That worked. So, let me get to my clock here. So yesterday I get online because I want to cancel a subscription that I've had for a year with the Adobe Corporation. They're the ones that wrote, they write lots of software, but especially Photoshop and Illustrator and InDesign, things that printers and publishers use, which I was very familiar with, and I was using it at home for various reasons, but it was going to go up after a year per month, so I decided to cancel it. And it took 5 minutes just to find how to cancel it and get to an agent, as they call themselves. So this is all online. And the agent says, "May I ask the reason for your cancellation?" And I said, "I'm not using the programs enough to justify the cost, and I wasn't pleased with the increase to $30 per month." I had forgotten about the introductory offer. So he reminded me of that, and then he says, "We would like to inform you that you will no longer have access to the latest updates and features if you decide to cancel now." And I replied, "That's fine, but I understand that, but I need to cancel." And the agent replies, "Just before I go ahead and cancel the subscriptions, may I ask you if you'd like to keep the subscription for the rest of your annual commitment if I offer you 2 months for free?" In other words, he's saying, "Continue another year and I'll give you the first 2 months free." And I say three words, "No, thank you." And he replies, "How about if I get you the next 3 months of your membership for free?" I took pictures on screens because this was becoming a long ordeal, and I thought, I'm going to use this for an illustration tomorrow. And I replied and I said, "I appreciate the offers, but I must decline. Thanks." And the agent says, "Okay." And then right after that he goes, "Will you stay and continue subscribing if we extend the introductory offer for another year?" That's the third pitch he's thrown at me. "No, sir," I replied, "going through financial hard times right now." And he replies, "As you gave me no choice, I will have to cancel your membership." And I'm thinking, I gave you no choice.
About 10 minutes ago.
You know, we have this phrase, seeing red. Well, I was seeing pink all the way through there. And getting a little bit irritated, you know, when something should take 5 minutes and it's taking 15, 20 minutes, the blood starts boiling a little bit. Get a little upset. Now, some of you never have that feeling, right? Some of you are real laid-back personalities, and at least from what we see, never get angry or upset. And, my father-in-law is pretty close to that. Of the 30-something years I've known him, rarely see him, at least my experience, getting angry or allowing that to get out of control is the whole idea here. Some of you may be familiar with the Angry Birds. They're outside a psychologist's office. Angry Birds is a video game franchise started in 2009 in Finland, a Finnish company. And so I've never played any of these games. In 2010, They had 12 million downloads. Started out with Apple and then expanded. And I've never played the game, so I don't know if it has kind of a funny, humorous side to it. I'm thinking it does. But I was sitting there thinking about the developer of this game, the actual individual who came up with this idea, if that individual is naturally a happy, joyful person. I'm assuming they are, but the whole world got caught up into Angry Birds. And would it fly? Pardon the pun. Would it fly if they were named cheerful birds or happy birds? Would that have caught on? I don't know. There's something in the conflict of that term, and then the funny things, you know, the cartoons that come out of it and everything, make us laugh. Here's some chickens talking to each other. You need to channel your anger into something more constructive, like, and the other chicken says, rage. Not what it's all about, is it? There's our main text this morning. And sorry, Evan, I didn't get you to come up and read that. That's okay. We can read it ourselves. Here's our main text. You know, there is a myth out there that Christians should never, ever get angry or get mad or see red. But the fact is, wouldn't you agree with me, that it is an appropriate emotion. The thing is, we should never allow it to get out of control, because it could lead to sinful behavior. Is that not right? As it says here in our text, be angry. Sometimes we just fly over that, but be angry is what he's saying there. And there is condition, isn't there? Do not sin. Do not let the sun go down in your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity, meaning a place, a foothold. We've had lessons about that last year. The beachhead, remember that? Do not let the devil have a foothold in your life through anger. But this myth here is that we're going to look at is anger is always bad. Anger is always bad. That's a myth. I want you to understand. Okay? But mainly because it is an emotion, if I can use that word, that God has given us. I think most of us understand that. And the fact that Psalm 7:11, very interesting passage, points out that God is angry. He is angry daily. And what is he angry at? He looks down at sin and at the evil that he sees upon this globe. And specifically there in the text, those who do not repent. And he has indignation. That means that's a very strong word for anger. Now, we as believers and Christians, we understand that we are to love. Our love as God is love. Isn't that right? And yet, in Romans 12, verse 9, what does the Spirit tell us? Abhor, hate that which is evil, and cling to that which is good. There's some abhorring and hating that we have to do. There are things that we should hate and display righteous indignation towards. Now, all of these emotions, such as anger, have their appropriate place. Jesus got angry. John 2, 15 and 17. He made a scourge of cords, drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen, and he poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. Now, how do you picture that scene? How do you picture that? I meant to get a chair. Good thing there's one handy. Is this how you picture it? The Lord coming in there and say, excuse me, please. Get out. Is that how you picture that scene? No, I picture more like this. Picking these chairs up, I got to watch things. Over the head, and heaving at 10, 20 feet. I don't know if he had an ugly face. I don't know if exactly how his voice was, but he definitely was angry, wasn't he? It was an appropriate action to take out of a righteous anger for what they were doing there. He was very angry and indignant with the Pharisees, whom he called hypocrites. Matthew 23:27-33, woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites. You serpents, you brood of vipers, how will you escape the sentence of hell? Now, that is pretty strong language, isn't it? Very strong. Here is deity, God himself. He's upset and he is angry at what he saw and the behavior and the attitudes of these people. So we should never conclude, is my submission to you, that this was a weak moment for Jesus, that this was sinful behavior on his part, because we know that's not the case. He reached all that he could stand, couldn't he? He just got, sometimes the Lord and Jesus himself got to a point where that's all they could stand and all they could take. You can see that in the Old Testament. Some of you might be familiar with Popeye the Sailor Man, right? Popeye the Sailor Man endured abuse, and he took it, and he took it. Who was the main antagonist in there? Brutus? Bluto? Yeah, whatever. Main antagonist, and he'd take it and take it. Popeye would take it until he got to the point where he, what would he do?
That's all I can stand, because I can't stand no more.
Something like that, right?
I'm on out of oil.
And he'd roll up his sleeves. And he couldn't stand. That's all I could stand because I can't stand anymore. He had righteous indignation. And it's healthy at times because there is a good side to anger. It leads to change. It's when we're saying enough is enough. A mild satisfaction, brethren, with the status quo is going to equal no effort. It's going to be equivalent to no effort in changing things for the better. That's not going to happen if we're just satisfied with the status quo. But if we combine fervent love with righteous indignation and holiness, that's going to produce this boldness that we're talking about. It's good to have boldness. We see this in Acts 17:6, when Paul was waiting for them at Athens. His spirit was being provoked within him as he was observing the city full of idols. He was determined to do something or to say something that would be helpful and useful to those unbelievers. Now, when you read his speech after that, he sounds calm and collected, but it does say his spirit was provoked within him as what he saw around him. He had that desire to extract those unbelievers from idolatry. And there in Athens, as far as is recorded, he was not persecuted, but he was persecuted in other cities, wasn't he, for standing up with boldness and being bold with the gospel. I sometimes wonder that if... Over the decades, if we here in America have not endured persecution and backlash because no one knows we're here. Because we haven't been standing up with boldness against the darkness. Appropriate anger is often beneficial for positive change, beneficial change. So there's my admonition, is that we need to ask ourselves a question. As God's people, are we too apathetic? Have we been apathetic? To stand up and point out the works of darkness. I'm wanting to stir up conviction within us, brothers and sisters, to be provoked. Do the things that need to be done in God's kingdom. There is a, let's look at God being angry. In the flood, for example, here's some good things that came about. The world was wicked, just steeped in sinfulness and transgressions. Everybody did what was right in his own eyes. The flood came along, wiped everybody out. We say that's horrible, but actually that was a chance for a new beginning. In the wilderness there, when he brought them out of his people, now these are God's people, brought them out of Canaan, and they committed immorality. And this is what happened at one time, 23,000 killed. What was the end result? The adultery stopped. Here we see that anger brought about a positive change for good. That's an example for us. And his people, just because they were God's people, didn't mean they could do anything they wanted and go had, you know, have license to do a free-for-all. And he was angry with them for transgressing and acting in a faithless manner, and he brought about discipline for them. Something to keep in mind for us. We'll get back to this myth here. There's also a myth that love is always good and anger is always bad. That's a bunch of garbage. That is not true. Is anger a God-given emotion? Yes, it is. Is love wonderful? Yes, it is. Is love something demonstrated by God and he expects us to demonstrate? Nod. Yes, it is. But it can be misdirected, can't it? Misdirection in the first point up there. The love of money is the root of all evil, which is often misrepresented as money is the root of all evil, but it's the love of money is the root of all evil. Some people, when they go out and have an affair, they call that love. And love, what they think is love, leads to an affair, which should really be called what? Adultery or fornication or whatever the case is. They call it love, but what did Solomon call it? Or how did Solomon describe it? He who commits adultery is void of understanding. We are not to love the world. We're not to do that. Neither the things that are in the world. Some people get off into loving themselves, lovers of self, loving pleasure, even those who love evil and wrath and violence. So in those cases, love is not a good thing. See my point there? Love is good or bad depending on how it is implemented and how it is used and how it is directed. What's the target? Same thing with anger. Anger is bad when it leads to the wrong reactions. And here's a little bit of what I was going to have Evan read. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you along with all malice. The context here is the seething anger which leads to these other things. See how it's related to these other things? Bitterness. And this is a series, by the way, on the storms within. And we've talked about bitterness. The last one was anxiety, and we've had depression and those things going on there, and guilt. So today we're looking at anger, and look at how it's related to bitterness. Clamor, that's a yelling match. Shouting and yelling at one another. And slander be put away from you. How do you react when you're angry? We react in 2 to 3 ways. 2 of these aren't good. Some people blow up, some clam up, but we all need to own up. We see an example of blowing up last year in Ferguson. Is that Missouri? And just last week in Baltimore. Is that Maryland? Yeah, Baltimore. Blowing up, people getting angry and doing things that harmed others, doing things that were totally unnecessarily and wrong, looting, burning, you know, damaging other people's property. That's blowing up. Clamming up is, some people react to in anger by clamming up. And that's a common reaction for many people. But anger needs to be accepted and realize that, again, it's an emotion God gave us and we need to deal with it, not suppress it. Right? And not to deny it and not to ignore it. Otherwise, it does lead to bitterness, which is in that last verse there. Right there, bitterness and those other things. It's no coincidence that, and this is in the English language obviously, anger is one letter short of danger. It's a danger to let your anger get out of control and control you. It's a danger to allow anger to be destructive. That's not where we want to go. Like love, and like lust, anger is an explosive emotion. And love and anger compete for our allegiance, just as God and Satan do. So which one has your allegiance? Love or anger are vying for your allegiance. All are going to love. All are going to have anger at times. The question is, how do we deal with these emotions? How will we control them or not control them? Let's look at a definition of anger. What is anger? It's described as indignation, which rises up and then becomes more settled. That comes from Thayer. Settled. When something settles, that's when you're going to count to 10, right? You feel the anger rising. Just like I was online with that salesman. I could feel it. I couldn't see him. I couldn't hear him. But I could read what he was writing. And he was turning the temperature up on my boiling pot. I could feel it. That's where you count to 10. Or take a deep breath, belly breathing. And that helps with stress too. And let it dissipate. Ideally, you want to be thinking before acting, correct? Now, Vines describes it this way. A seething emotion frequently with a view towards taking a revenge. Now, when it gets to that point, taking revenge, that's ungodly, right, brethren? Don't want to go there. Romans 12, save the vengeance for the Lord. But when you begin plotting revenge because you are so angry, that's where the devil is going to get a foothold, which we talked about earlier, right? That's where you're giving place to the devil. That's wrath. Wrath is kind of like water piling up behind a dam. Any of you read the story of that town in the early 1900s, I believe it was? Was it Johnston or something in Pennsylvania? And it had an earthen dam above it, which finally gave out in some heavy rains and totally wiped the town out. Well, that's kind of the idea of wrath. A lot of pressure built up behind a dam. Or what happens, Nathan, when you fill a balloon up with water? You wrap a balloon around a hose and you fill up and you just leave it. That balloon gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And eventually it's going to do what, Nathan? Explode. And there's our idea of wrath. That's right. Unfortunately, people try to justify blowing up and getting angry. And in other words, not controlling it. A violent blaze will hurt others. Proverbs 14:7, a quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man of evil devices is hated. On the other hand, if we understand these emotions, then we can control them and do something about it, maybe turning it into something productive and effective. Parents, it's wrong to teach your children never to be angry. Don't teach your children that, to never be angry. There's some things they need to get angry at, which we've already alluded to. But there's also things in which they need to control their anger. And again, those riots are a great illustration of that, correct? How many people in Baltimore, if the media was able to go around to all those people in Baltimore and say, why did you do this? How many would say, well, I was angry. Well, does that justify going around destroying buildings and starting fires and looting and throwing rocks and stuff at the police? Is that justify that? See, there was no self-control there. Some people say, well, you provoked me. Mm-hmm. What does 1 Corinthians 13 say? Love is not easily provoked. Christianity is the idea of turning the other cheek, isn't it? And don't respond with an insult. That's the idea. You know, folks, it's really character development is what we're talking about here. Whether you struggle with anger and controlling anger or not, we're talking about character development. Some people say, well, I'm Irish, or I'm Italian, or I'm a redhead. Those are excuses, aren't they? Another excuse was, I was born this way. Really? You were born that way? Now, some people may have a propensity for anger, but this doesn't excuse learning how to get a hold of it and to control it, does it? There's no excuse for ignoring that. Proverbs 14, where's my Proverbs 14? There it is there. Let's read it again. Quick-tempered man acts foolishly. Remember that. There was an evangelist not long ago. He told a story of counseling a woman who confessed that she threw angry barbs at her husband once in a while. She'd get mad and then say, "I'm sorry, I didn't really mean that." And she asked the evangelist, the counselor, what's the big deal? And he said, "The big deal is it's like a shotgun. You load a shotgun." Kramer has a nice shotgun, right, Kramer? We go out shooting clay pigeons, load that shotgun. How long does it take, Kramer, for that shot to get out of the gun and hit that clay pigeon when you pull that trigger?
Half a second.
Yeah, whether you're accurate or not, that explosion is very quick, isn't it? And that's what anger and wrath are. It's very quick. And that shot spreads out, and it hurts from that shotgun. So when you're on the other end of that shotgun, say a little ways out there, you duck. There's no time, really, but think about it. You try to protect yourself, or you're going to be hurt. And he's trying to explain this to this woman. That's what happens when they throw barbs at somebody else. They begin to protect themselves and they begin to build up walls. And that's why we have in some families, husband and wife are strangers in their own house because they built up walls trying to protect themselves from the other one. The other one's anger. It's not a good thing. Angry barbs are difficult to take back. And so you end up with strangers in the same house. Be angry, do not sin. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who captures a city. It's a magnificent thing to capture a city with an army, but it's even a greater thing to rule one's spirit. It's impressive to capture a city, but it's a more important to control your spirit. That's one of the fruits of the Spirit, isn't it? Self-control, right? Let's remember that. Another thing that people do is clam up. Instead of dealing with it, they bury their anger alive. And they avoid confrontation and they avoid violence, which is a good thing to avoid confrontation sometimes. But these are the ones that suffer with it in quiet indignation. They're indignant, but they suffer. They simmer. And many of you have seen a pot of water, right? With you're cooking rice or something, and it's just simmering in there. And if you turn that up, then it starts boiling, and it can just boil over. Another good example is spray cans, spray paint cans. How many of you use spray cans? You go, I loved it just to hear those little things in there clanking around. And I just stand there all day. Man, this is fun. And spray something with that pressure in there allows that paint to come out. And we could go further with this illustration. You can use it in a good way or a bad way. You can spray a red wagon or a chair or a piece of furniture or a piece of metal or something with that spray can. Or you can go out and do graffiti and deface buildings, right? That'd be a bad thing. But what we want to focus on is that pressure inside there. That's the clam up person. That pressure is there, and then sometime at some point, some little thing is going to set them off. And they explode all over the place. And they're not aware of why they're so touchy. Because they've been holding it in and clamming it up for so long. They're just out of touch. And so they have a hard time getting close to people. It's like trying to hug a porcupine, right? Have you ever run across people like that? They're just their quills come up and you cannot get close to them. Probably because they've been doing some of this. It poisons their spirits and they harm themselves and often innocent parties. Excuse me. You know, if you never lose your temper, that is a good thing. But if you say, "I never get angry, never get angry. I always hold it in." That's not a good thing. Not a good thing. If you do not know how to control and dissipate your anger, it's going to lead to a lot of bad things. And we've talked about this in other lessons, the health issues, high blood pressure, heart problems, insomnia, maybe mental disorders. If you do not learn how to let your anger dissipate and be angry appropriately. Sounds funny, doesn't it? Here's somebody who clammed up, Jonah, in Jonah 4, verses 2, 4, and 9. What was Jonah's mission? Go to Nineveh. Go to Nineveh and preach to change their minds so that they may change their minds to the Lord. And the Ninevites were the enemies of Israel. Jonah wasn't excited about seeing them repent, was he? So what was his reaction? He got mad, went and sat under a vine or something and pouted. A vine the Lord gave him, right? Pouted, whined about it. It greatly displeased Jonah. He became angry. See you there? The Lord said, "Do you have good reason to be angry?" I love this conversation here. He said, "I have good reason to be angry, even to death. Wish you'd just let me die. Not like what I saw." Kind of immature, isn't it? And when you think about it, when we get angry, brethren, and we don't control it, we look silly. We look immature. Look like children sometimes. But Jonah thought he had it. This is a selfish anger. There's two kinds of anger that are never right, and this is one of them. The selfish anger. It's always wrong. And that there's a good illustration of it. And so the Lord had to teach him a lesson, didn't he? Do you have good reason to be angry? That was a great question the Lord asked him. James 1:19, let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Because the other type of anger is impatient anger. So we have selfish anger and impatient anger. This would be where you're in a long line at the grocery store or at the bank. And let's take the grocery store. Somebody's writing a check and it's a bad check or it's out of town check or something. And they've got 3 million items on the conveyor belt. You have four. And all the other lines are long. And you know, we're tapping our foot and looking around getting huffy. That's impatient anger. And that's just a simple illustration. But are stuck in traffic, you know, road rage comes out of this kind of anger. And we've heard a lot of bad stories about road rage, haven't we? Some are very bad. Now, slow to anger, James says. Why is this so important? This is very important, brethren. Be slow to anger. Why? He answers that in verse 20. The anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. So be quick to listen. This is very important. And again, the rioting of last week, was that achieving the righteousness of God? And a lot of angry people was not achieving the righteousness of God. No matter where you fall or what you think about that or what happened, you know, they jump to conclusions. I don't care what the subject is. That behavior was not justified and not right. Do you have good reason to be angry? That's what the Lord asked him. Let's look at something out of Ecclesiastes 7, 8, and 9. Patience of spirit is better than haughtiness of spirit. Do not be eager in your heart to be angry. Why? It's up there. Why do you not want to be angry in your heart to eager to be angry? Because it resides in the bosoms of fools. So avoid impatient anger. Selfish anger and impatient anger are always wrong. So here's how we take care of all these things. We read that. The key is to own up. Ignore the petty things is the first thing we've got up there. Own up by ignoring the petty things. You know, maybe somebody forgot your wedding anniversary, like your husband. Or maybe somebody forgot your birthday or didn't visit you when you were sick. Or said something which didn't quite sit right with you. Give people grace. Overlook their shortcomings.
ignore the petty little things. We let those anger us and get out of control. May God help us. If it's a continuing, ongoing basis, especially in a family, in a church family also. Also, the second thing, avoid anger-prone people. Proverbs 22, 24, 25. With a wrathful man thou shalt not go, unless you learn his ways and get a snare to your soul. There's a saying that he who lies down with the dogs is apt to rise up with the fleas. Ever heard of that one? Yeah? So don't hang around with anger-prone people. Now, I've known angry people, and this is under the topic of owning up. I've known angry people over the years that point their fingers at others because they don't want to accept the fact that they're the ones that need to control their anger. So they make excuses, and they blame others, and it's an ongoing thing. And they just don't see it. Now, and they misinterpret it when somebody like me says that, yes, there are incidences and people and situations that can trigger anger, set it off, and those trigger people may not even know it. Maybe your dog. Maybe your mother-in-law. But my mother-in-law is not the source of me not controlling my anger. She may say something that triggers it, but it's me that has to control it, right? It's not her fault, as we like to say. So don't blame it on her. That just really irritates me when me or others can't understand that and they want to point the finger to others instead of owning up. It's not the others. It's not the trigger people that are the sinners. It's you that is a sinner if you're allowing that anger to get out of control and sin in that way. Watch your tongue. We know this one. Proverbs 15, a gentle answer turns away wrath. Boy, I've seen that. I've seen it happen. But a harsh word stirs up anger. Abundance of words, transgressions abound. That's also in Proverbs. Watch your tongue, you and me, especially when we're angry. So here's something to do. Be solution-oriented, not problem-oriented. Express it, give it over to the Lord, and channel it properly. And you'll see anger dissipates. Instead of blowing up a mountain, why don't you build a tunnel through the mountain? Right? Something constructed, something that'll allow the train to get through. Instead of blowing the whole mountain apart. And ask yourself, why am I so upset, and what can I do to eliminate that and alleviate it? It might be, first of all, like we said earlier, counting to 10, taking a deep breath, just getting out of the situation for a while, letting things calm down before you address it. Those things are very helpful. And then when you do that, it's not just eliminating anger, but it's replacing it. And here's a great verse, follows right up. Be kind to one another. So replace it with kindness, tenderhearted, forgiving each other, just as God and Christ also forgave you. This is the antidote, brethren, right? I think you know this. This is the antidote. Awesome passage, isn't it? Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another. 20 years I've been here with this church, I've seen this happen. I've seen people demonstrate this. I'm encouraging you to continue in this. Don't just eliminate anger. Replace it with this. Some people might get upset when they have a friend or a relative or something who dies. Maybe it's at the hands of evil. For example, a murder. Those who know or were acquainted with a murder victim. Or a drunk driver. You have a friend or a family relative that is killed by a drunk driver. And one of the reactions is to get angry at that, isn't it? Another reaction is to get angry at God. Ever known anybody who's done that? Don't blame God. When pain and sorrow comes along like that, don't blame God. The hurts and the pains and the sorrows are a result of us living in a sinful world, in a fallen world. That's what you trace it back to. Often the suffering is from the sins of others. We're suffering the consequences of others. and what others have done. And sin has brought these bad things about. And Satan has brought these bad things about. Get angry at that. How do you channel the energy? Well, don't be angry at God. Be angry at sin, brethren. Be angry at Satan. Be angry at the rebellion in this world. Turn the anger on evil. And constructively reach out and teach other people and influence other people to be a force for good. Amen? That's what I don't know if I've been doing a good job of it this past year, but that's one of my goals, is to stir us up and encourage us to do this very thing. Be a force for good. Have some righteous indignation, a little bit of anger about what we see around us, instead of just curling up and cuddling up with our teddy bear at home and ignoring everything out and around us. And I know I have great improvement in this area, and I'm asking you to help me. Let's help one another in doing this. You know, Edmund Burke, he wrote, "Only one is necessary. One thing is necessary for evil to triumph, and that is for good men and good women to stand by and do absolutely nothing." That's what Edmund Burke wrote. We need more righteous indignation. Amongst ourselves, we need to control our anger. But when we look out and be angry at sin within the church, and hopefully we won't see that, but it happens because humans were humans, even though we've been baptized into Christ. But the sin and the evil is all around us out there. Let's be angry at that. We need more people angry and not apathetic, but bold, standing up for what's right. How do you spend your time during the week? Just preening yourself? Yeah, Nathan? Yeah, preening yourself, just doing everything for ourselves. Let's be active in the Lord's kingdom about combating sin and transgressions. Let's not blow up. Don't blow up, brethren. Don't clam up, but let's own up. Don't become cynical, but let's become part of the solution. Hello. Is that my last one? So again, let's ask ourselves, can I be part of the solution? Can I control my anger? We don't want to go to the one extreme where we say anger is bad, let's never do it, but we also don't want to be angry all of the time, right, and blowing up on every little situation and every little thing. Let's learn how to control it, but let's use it in the kingdom to fight the forces of darkness. Is that just something preachers just should say because they should say that kind of thing? Are you excited about being in the kingdom, brethren? Yes. All right, just have some energy. Yes. Let's have some energy. Let's get out and have some energy this week and the following weeks. All right, who's our song leader? You have a song? Thank you for your attention. Thank you for being here this morning. Preston, thank you for your example. And you have a determination, as Lane was pointing out in his prayer, that is a great example for many of us. You're a hard worker, and I pray that you continue with that so that your energy and activity may be directed in the work for the Lord's kingdom. And we really appreciate you and your family. So let's stand and sing as we close this service together. And what was the song number again?
We're going to sing number 576.
576. All right, let's stand, please, if you're able to.